Well, for a lot of people, fall means football, and if you're a Wisconsin football fan, you likely spent Friday night watching the Badger game. Larry Mueller here, and on the show today, we're talking about Badgers football team with our guest, Jim Polzine. Great to have him with us again. He's sports reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal, also hosts the Open Gym podcast for Badger Extra, writes for Badger Extra as well. And it does a great job. As we talk with Jim, I hope you'll join in. What questions do you have about the Badgers? What do you expect of the Badgers for the rest of the season? Did you go to the game Friday night? Love to hear your thoughts. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Jim Polzine, good to have you back. Thanks for joining in.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
Well, Friday night, the Badgers won against Western Michigan, but it certainly wasn't an easy win. Let's talk about some of the takeaways from the game. Likes and dislikes. I guess there were a few things to like about the game.
Yeah, let's go to their offense first. I like the fact that they can put together 15 and 16 play drives. I don't think that can be overlooked. It's not easy to stay on the field and move the chains and do that over and over and over. So that is a positive, that they were able to sustain drives without penalty killer or turnovers and all that. That's the like part of that, of the offense. The dislike is you need to have some big plays once in a while. They ran 82 plays offensively. They didn't have one over 20 yards. That's not something that you can do, and that will not sustain throughout a season. You need to have big plays, big chunk plays, just to make your life a little bit easier on you.
Well, Tyler Van Dyke, as a quarterback, is at least half responsible for those big plays. What are your thoughts on his debut?
I thought he was a little uneven, and maybe to be expected. He's a debut. You're going to be a little nervous. He comes here with something to prove after the way things ended at Miami. So I don't know how much of that was on his mind. You know, just kind of coming out and making a great debut instead of just kind of playing your game. I thought he forced things at times, got a little bit greedy with a couple of his throws, and almost got intercepted a couple times in the red zone.
Just lucky.
Right, absolutely. And so, you know, I don't think it was bad. I don't think it was great. Somewhere in the middle, and I think if you can clean up some of those decisions going into week two, that will bode well for him.
I'm willing to bet you would agree with me that the special teams play was not up to par.
No, I get grade. You know, part of my job responsibility after games is to grade the offense, defense, special teams, and just overall. I had the special teams as an F until they recovered that fumble on the punt. I mean, I just thought there were some things within the game, a missed field goal, you know, some decision-making stuff in terms of kickoffs, and it just was not a great performance until that play. And I don't want to, you know, poo-poo that play, because that was a game-turning play. If that fumble recovery doesn't happen, Wisconsin's down one at that point. I don't know how that game plays out in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
So not an F performance, but I think I gave it a D-.
You know, what bothered me the most about special teams, Western Michigan is going to kick a field goal, and
yes.
I said, watch out for a fake. I mean, it just...
Right, because Western Michigan is down 6 at that point. They just missed one from a similar length. The field goal doesn't do a ton of good at that point of the game. So I would have been on high alert, certainly. The play they ran, credit to Western Michigan, that play was nifty.
It was well executed.
Yeah. But yes, I thought there was a little bit of lack of awareness there and ended up biting them.
Yeah, yeah. Jim and Jane in Madison has something for us. Hi, Jane.
I just wanted to say, I want to give a shout out to Jim. I'm not a sports person. We still get the State Journal, and I will read his column because I love your writing.
Thank you, Jane. That means a lot. I appreciate it. For anybody out there that listens, I appreciate the people that still get the paper. I know there's a lot of different ways you can get to us now, online, paper, but love hearing that, and it was nice of you to call in and say that.
Yeah, thanks, Jane. I get the paper too, Jane, so there you go. Appreciate it very much. You can join in too at 800-642-1234. Email to talk at WPR.org. Historically, you know, the Badgers have been considered a very physical team, but that certainly didn't come through for me on Saturday. I'm sorry, Friday. What do you think? What can the program do to regain that reputation? Or maybe was this just, you know, the first game or whatever?
Yeah, I do want to get more of a sample size before I jump to any grand conclusions, but it's somewhat alarming coming off last season when I think both sides of the lines were issues, and you wanted to see the improvement there. I think the biggest question mark I had going into this season was on the defensive side of the ball, defensive line. I just didn't think they were super deep there. I've said this a couple of times in talks leading into the season. Kendall Benton was a really good player here a couple of years ago. He's playing for the Steelers now. He was a difference maker, a guy you had to account for if you're an offense. I don't think they have that guy on the defensive line right now. And James Thompson Jr. would have been that guy. He's hurt and probably out for the season, or most of it anyways. So that was a big loss heading into the season. Offensively, I thought the offensive line played okay. That's still an area that worries me because while I like their starting five, the depth behind that group is very, very young. If they would lose one or two starters from that group, I think you get pretty young in a hurry. And so that's where my eyes are going to be all season, because I think, you know, if you want to diagnose the issues within this program over the last 5 years or so, this offensive line has not lived up to the standard that some of their best teams have had. And trying to put a finger on why that is, I don't know that I've gotten there yet, but I know it's an issue.
Yeah. And I was amazed that Western Michigan kept running on the left side of our line and making yards.
Yeah, because if that happens in week one, you do worry about what the Alabamas and other Big Ten teams are going to do.
Yeah. I guess on the positive side, despite, you know, could have been better offensive line, I thought the backs played pretty well.
Yeah, and they have numbers there. I think that's the one thing that jumps out about that group is, you know, I don't think there's a Jonathan Taylor in that group necessarily, but last year you had Braylon Allen and Ches Malusi, and you didn't know what you had behind them. And when when Ches Malusi got hurt, it's Braylon Allen carrying a lot of the load, and then he kind of got dinged up. They have really made over that group. They brought in a couple freshmen that we didn't even see Friday night. Darian Dupree and Dylan Jones are two guys that flashed throughout training camp. We didn't see them Friday night, but I think we will at some point. And then the two starters, Ches Malusi and Tawi Walker, I think are a solid 1-2 punch. Cade Iacomelli is a guy I didn't know what kind of role he would face, and he ended up having the longest run of the night, which was 12 yards. So I think they have some. I think they have numbers there. I think they have some flexibility just in terms of how they use these guys. And ideally, Larry, you want to keep these guys fresh late into the season. I think they'll be able to do that this year.
Last season, the Badgers went 7-6. How does their 2023 the schedule this year compared to what they face
night and day? This might be I was going to do this at some point. I never got to it. This might be as difficult of a schedule on paper as they've had as long as I can remember. If you just look at from the AP rankings, five of the teams that they're going to face this season were in the preseason top 25, three in the top 10, and that doesn't take into account the other teams that are kind of fringe top 25 teams. Like, I think Nebraska is going to be better this year. I think that trip to Rutgers in October is not going to be easy. Trips to Northwestern are never easy. So there's three games that if you're an optimistic Badger fan, you kind of have those chalked up as wins. And I would put them in the toss-up category. So, and I thought last year's schedule was manageable. Yeah. And one of the reasons why I thought they'd go 10-2 is because I thought, if you look at it, I think they're favored in 11 of them. And that just, you know, they lost some games that they probably weren't expected to. And if that happens again this year, then it's going to be tough to get to 500.
Yeah. Do you think they can make 8 wins?
So, Larry, thinking throughout training camp, I had them at 7-5 all season. And then late in training camp, I think I got optimistic, maybe overly optimistic, and I thought they'd get to 8-4, which I think would be a considering the schedule, would be a impressive season. 8-4, I know it doesn't sound very impressive in the grand scheme of things, but I think based on the schedule, it would signify to me progress in year two of the Luke Fickell era.
And you did write in your column that the Badgers are better this year than they were last.
I think they are better, Larry. I do. I mean, like, I thought from what I saw in camp and in the spring, I think the roster has been upgraded, and I also thought the returning guys would have more comfort in the systems, both offensively and defense. I think that was part of the problem last year, is you're getting used to new schemes, and there's a little bit of a growing pains period. So I think that, you know, I thought that would improve into year two, and not saying it can't. We certainly didn't see a ton of that Friday night. But, yes, I think you look at this roster, 2023 compared to 24, it's better. But my caveat to that was I don't know that the record is going to be better because the schedule is much more difficult.
Jim Polzin, our guest today. Great to have him with us, a sports writer for the Wisconsin State Journal. And great to have him with us today. Questions for him? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. We're taking a look at Badger football today with our guest. It's great to have with us Jim Polzin, sports reporter for the State Journal. You can join in again at 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. Just a quick reminder, at noon we'll hear from a weightlifter who made her way to the Olympics, and then we'll learn more about curling ahead of the matchup between Team USA and Team Canada, which is pretty cool. It's a kind of a first. So, again, join in, 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. I want to go back to the offensive line for just a minute. So, you're more or less happy with the first five that we've got?
Yeah, and a lot of that has to do with the experience level. The two tackles, Jack Nelson and Riley Malman, have just played a lot of football here. They need to make a jump, no doubt about it, but I think that can happen. The interior, Joe Huber played a lot of football last year. Joe Brunner is a state kid who's playing left guard now. Came here as a pretty highly regarded recruit, kind of a bulldozer type, really a traditional Wisconsin guy, kind of the old days Wisconsin guy. And then in the middle, Jake Renfro is the center. He came with Luke Fickell and company from Cincinnati, started on a team that went to the playoffs there. A lot of experience there. So I like that five. Is it outstanding? That remains to be seen, right? I mean, I think we're so spoiled around here to some degree that we've had a lot of years where the offensive line was just, you know, they had All-Americans on it. I don't know if there's any All-Americans on this group, but I think it can improve. But like I said before, it's after that that it gets a little dicey. There's a lot of good, young, highly regarded recruits in the system, but we just haven't seen enough of them to know if they can play.
Well, they're young guys.
They're young, yeah.
18, 19 years old.
And one thing to remember, too, with this group, Larry, is they've, you know, like Jack Nelson, the left tackle, is on his fourth position coach in as many years. They've been a lot of changes on that offensive line front, and that's, I don't think that's great. I mean, I'm a big fan of continuity for a lot of years here. Bob Bostad was the offensive line coach, then Joe Rudolph before that, guys like Jim Huber. They were here 8, 9, 10 years, and there's the ability to have this continuity within the pipeline, and that just hasn't happened of late, and I think that's part of the problem.
Yeah, I think so, too. And maybe why we're not getting the line, the offensive and defensive lines, I mean, practically all of them were from Wisconsin at some point, and now they're going other places.
Yeah, I mean, they've you know, if you look at recruiting, they've missed out on some high-end kids in-state. There was, in Brunner's class, there was a guy named Carson Hinsman, who Ohio State came in and got over Wisconsin. There's a kid, Billy Shrouth, who's down at Notre Dame, and Wisconsin recruited him. So they've lost some head-to-head battles with some power programs. I think that's one thing that's happened lately, too, is that I think bigger programs have recognized that the talent level and the skill level of Wisconsin offensive linemen, both sides of the ball really, is high. And now Wisconsin, it used to be that you had this wall around Wisconsin, you could count on the best players staying. It's easier than ever to leave. And we haven't even talked about NIL yet.
Yeah,
right?
I know. We'll get to that.
Okay, that's a we'll game changer.
John in Sun Prairie has something. Let's go there. Hi, John.
Hi, Jim. Enjoy your column when I see it in the State Journal. Just had a question on the total blow up of the football program several years ago with Paul Chryst leaving. Do you think where do you think we are on a scale now? Are we still in the building stage? Was it worth it to go through all that? Or has this gotten us something that we can really build on for the future? Kind of, what's your opinion on it?
Yeah, good question, John. I mean, I think I would say this. I would preach patience as much as possible. Luke Fickell's in year two. I think it does take a new coach, even in this new era. I think it takes a coach 3 to 4 years before you can get your guys in the system, get your guys developmentally ready. And so I don't know if this process is going to happen overnight. You certainly want to see progress. You know, I think it's fair to judge a team by progress it's making. But I think Luke Fickell was brought here to contend for championships. That's what Chryst McIntosh said. And if that's not happening in, you know, year four, I think that certainly is, a scary proposition and something that needs to be looked at closer. But we're early in year two. I think that's fair to kind of hit the brakes and evaluate where this program is year to year. I would have said this to you. I've been pretty consistent in what I've said about blowing up the program. I felt like a change needed to be made. I think the more you learned after the fact that it was time in this new era of NIL and transfer portal to change things up. I probably at the time would have hired Jim Leonard, only because Jim Leonard's a guy that everything he's touched in his career, both as a player and as a coach, has turned to gold. I thought he deserved a chance to kind of prove what he got or what he could do. I understand, however, Chryst McIntosh's decision to go with someone that was proven. I mean, Luke Fickell was a guy that was up for jobs at LSU and USC and Notre Dame. Really a guy that was highly thought of in this business, a guy that had led Cincinnati to a playoff, a guy that had sent a lot of guys into the NFL. So if you're looking at Jim Leonard versus Luke Fickell at the time and you want to go with the proven commodity and a guy that'll maybe come in and change the culture and like you said, blow things up in terms of everything, weight room, staff, recruiting department. I understand why Chryst McIntosh did what he did. And I think now we just kind of need to sit back and see how it turns out. And I don't know that we're going to have that answer this year, certainly.
Yeah. John, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Jim in Wausau, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Jim. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay, I'm wondering if our guest thinks our quarterback position, Tyler Van Dyke, is an upgrade over last year's quarterback, Tanner Mordecai.
That's a great question. I don't know that it's too early to say for sure. I mean, I did get to watch 3 weeks of camp, and I don't know that it's hard to evaluate the two. They're so different. Tanner Mordecai was a guy that could run a little bit better, I think. I don't know that we ever saw the true Tanner Mordecai either last year. Got injured. Was really handcuffed by being the first guy in this system where a lot of guys around him didn't maybe understand the air raid or were still kind of trying to get used to it. So I don't know that a true evaluation could ever take place. I mean, to be fair, Mordecai went out and earned a job on the practice squad with the 49ers. I think he's pretty highly thought of in this by football people. I don't know that we saw the true Tanner Mordecai last year. Tyler Van Dyke's an interesting prospect. If you go back to his freshman year at Miami, he was the ACC Rookie of the Year. Had a great year. At that point of his career, people were looking at him as a potential first or second day pick in the NFL draft if he kind of kept it up. He didn't. Struggled with injuries, struggled with kind of losing favor with the Miami staff, and his last 2 years just ended up kind of going backwards and ended up losing his job. So you look at him, and I'm sure you guys saw it too, whether you're at the game or on TV. Arm strength is there. I think he can fit the ball in a lot of windows. He can throw the deep ball, even though we didn't really see that play out on Friday night. I still think there's a good quarterback in there, but it's going to be up to him and really the guys around him to prove that. I don't know if they've upgraded. I don't know that I would say that it was a drastic downgrade either, though.
Yeah. Jim, thanks a lot for calling. That reminded me of Graham Mertz. I watched the Florida-Miami game.
Yeah.
A friend of mine is a big Florida fan, and they were ecstatic about getting Graham Mertz. And I think Florida doesn't have an offensive line, at least pass protection, very much.
Yeah, and his numbers last year were good. I think a lot of people, if they just look at stats, they were good.
He was first in the SEC, and I think fourth in the nation.
Yeah.
74% or 5% passing.
Right, but if you look, I mean, if you kind of break that down, and I saw him play a couple times last year, especially in the big games, he was not great. And again, like, that's judging an offense by one person is never fair, because there's always people around and there's guy calling the plays. There's a lot of factors that go into how successful a passing game is. But I think we saw in week one against Miami some of the issues that Graham Mertz had here still exist at Florida.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of watching games, I did watch the USC and LSU game.
Yeah.
Talk about two really good. That was a great game to watch with a couple of really great quarterbacks.
It's funny, Larry, we were talking about what you expect from this team, and I made a change late in camp that I thought this team could go 8-4, and I had kind of been at the 7-5 mark all camp. One of the reasons why was, the more I thought about that USC game, I thought that was a game they could win. I just thought they could go in there and Wisconsin could be more physical, and maybe catch a USC team that was coming off kind of a rough season. I tell you what, after watching Wisconsin play Friday night and USC play on Saturday, I think I've changed my mind on that game, because I was impressed by USC's quarterback, and I was impressed by how physical USC was.
Yeah, very physical. John in Sun Prairie, we'll go to you now. Hi, John.
Hi, Jim. I just wanted to try to find out how much the Badgers basketball and football programs have available for NIL spending. I had heard that Store got some extreme amounts when he left UW and the NIL, and I just wondered, what do we have a budget, or how do they work that out?
Yeah, I'll try to break this down as best I can. I think one of the issues with NIL in general is there's not a lot of transparency. We don't, unlike the NFL, where there's a salary cap and we know players' salaries, they don't have to disclose that at the college level. There's a lot you can do kind of behind the scenes, and it starts to creep into what the rumors are and stuff. Like you mentioned AJ Store, that figure I think was all over social media and maybe even reported in the news, reached as high as 7 figures from what we heard, right? And Wisconsin certainly doesn't have it in the budget to pay one player that much money. I know less about the football situation than I do about basketball, and that's only because I sat down with Greg Gard, I think it was May or June, and he did a really good job of breaking down for me what the NIL game looks like in terms of what he's doing. He kind of branched off on his own to a certain degree, kind of took the bull by the horns and started a thing called a six-man society, and it's kind of under the umbrella of the Varsity Collective, but it's really a lot of Greg Gard and his staff going out to donors and you know, asking for money and telling them why NIL is important and why they have to do this to keep up with the Joneses. And the figure he gave me, I believe, was somewhere between $3 to $5 million. If you're going to compete these days, you need to be between $3 and $5 million per year from an NIL standpoint. And that's not going to compete with the North Carolinas and Dukes and Alabamas of the world, but that's going to keep you in that kind of that fair price range. So I think that's, if I had to guess, that's where Wisconsin basketball is at, somewhere, I would say somewhere in the middle of that $3 to $5 million range. But that's got to, you know, if you could, let's put the number at $4 million. That doesn't get you, you're certainly not going to spend $1 million of that on AJ Store. You're not going to spend high six figures on a Chucky Hepburn. And you got to be creative about the way you spend money, because you need 7, 8, 9 good players to create a good team.
You know, just to go along with that, I've noticed he's gone in international a lot. And I wonder if that's part of the strategy.
It absolutely is. I mean, I think the NIL game, it's a little bit complicated, but it's not, it's trickier. The visa rules are different. International players can get NIL money. It's different in the way they have to do it. So, and I certainly think you're not talking about the salaries, that is the word I'm going to use, because that's essentially what they are. You're not talking about paying international players as much as you are if you're recruiting against Illinois or Iowa or somebody for a kid from the Midwest.
Someone told me or had said they had read that the player of the year last year, of course, is from Canada, did not get from Purdue get any NIL money.
No, I would highly doubt that. Yeah, because you can, like I said, there are ways that international players can earn NIL without losing their visa, and part of it is they could, like Zach Edey at Purdue could get NIL money in Canada. Like you can hold your own camps in Canada, and or some other sort of way of using your name, image, and likeness if you're in the country, and that certainly is fair game. I think the trick becomes when you come into the States and start to do that. It gets a little bit trickier.
Someone else emails in about Phil Longo, the air raid offense. Explain the air raid offense, what do you think of it?
Yeah, we're still waiting to see some of the explosion that Phil Longo. I mean, listen, I'm not gonna rip on Phil Longo. His track record prior to coming to Wisconsin was pretty good at North Carolina for 4 years, at Mississippi for 2 years. Prior to that, he was at the FCS level and leading teams to playoffs and conference championships. He's had success everywhere he went. Air Raid, I think, can give people the wrong impression. I think people thought he would come in here and just throw the ball around at will and Wisconsin would become this pass happy offense. And that's even from day one, he said, I like to run the ball. I'm not going to go away from Wisconsin's strengths. He likes balance. I think in a perfect world, he would like 50-50 split. In fact, he's been very adamant this year that he's used as a stat that over the last 13 years of his offense, I think they've run the ball 18 more times than they've passed it, or maybe it's the other way around, but it's close. I think the problem has been certainly finding the right efficiency from a passing standpoint where you can hit some big plays once in a while. There just weren't enough big plays last year, and certainly in the opener there weren't any big plays. You want to find that right balance where you can mix good passing, open up things in the running game, and we just haven't seen that yet. I use this crazy stat, Larry, that they haven't scored. Wisconsin's program hasn't scored 40 points in a game since Jim Leonard's debut as interim head coach midway through the 22 season. So you're talking about a season and a half plus now that they haven't hit 40 points in a game. And why is that number important? It's a little bit of a, arbitrary number, but 40 points these days in college football is a number that programs hit week in and week out. And Wisconsin hasn't done it in, I think, going on 20 games now. That's just, it seems like something's off. I want to caution to not jump to conclusions after one game, but this offense needs to pick it up this season. They averaged 23 points last season. That's not enough. You need to add to that.
Yeah, and part of it seemed to be finishing a little bit, and that was last year too.
And that's one knock on the air raid is that when you spread a team out and you try to use vertical passing, easier to do between the 20s because there's more space. Once you get down to the red zone, you don't have that backspace anymore. The end zone's there. It's a little bit easier to defend, and you got to be better. You got to be more creative. You got to find guys in the middle. They really want guys to pick up in their, it's called yak, yards after catch, where you're catching a ball, you've got some space. Receivers can kind of show their what they have moves wise and quickness wise. Just didn't see enough of that in the opener. Didn't see any balls. I think they threw one deep ball. So I'd like to see more of that heading into the Alabama game.
So what did you think of the receivers? We had two receivers that kind of stood, one of redshirt freshmen.
Yeah, Will Pauling is, I'll get to him first. Will Pauling is a guy who caught 70-plus balls last year. I think they'd like that number to drop just because of that. I think they'd like more balance from the receiving standpoint. I think the way Luke Fickell put it is he'd like his receptions number to drop, but his receiving yards to go up, meaning that yard per catch is going to go up. And that's, again, kind of what I'm talking about with big plays. I think he's a playmaker on this team. Tretch Kekahuna is the redshirt freshman you're referring to. We saw a little bit in the bowl game last year against LSU what he could do, and a little bit in the opener, too. He's a guy that if he gets the ball in space, I think he's going to make some things happen. So I think you can count on those two. One issue is they play the same position. You know, it's there's they can get them on the field at the same time, but it's not going to be super frequent. I think where this offense needs to take a jump this year is the guys on the outside, the outside receivers, Bryson Green, Vinny Anthony, CJ Williams. Williams and Bryson Green were two of the more highly regarded transfers that Wisconsin brought in a year ago. And I just don't think we've seen the production from them that maybe we thought we'd see.
Yeah, that's interesting. One point I think it was kind of interesting is that the transfer portal brought in some quarterbacks from December. Who are, you know, talk about those guys.
Actually, it was like last December. It was last December. And Tanner Mordecai was one of them.
Yeah, it was one of them, but there were some others.
Yeah, Braden Locke. Who's a guy we saw last year. He was a backup last year. He lost the job again this year. He's a backup. Only a sophomore. I think there's a world this year where even if Van Dyke starts the whole season, Braden Locke has shown enough that he's your starting quarterback in 2025. I think that's ideally what they'd like to do, Larry, because Luke Fickell is on the record saying, I don't want to go to the transfer portal every year to find a quarterback. I don't want one-year solutions every year. So I think in a perfect world, Braden Locke wins that job next spring and is your quarterback for the next 2 years. Nick Evers is a guy, they highly regarded guy they brought in the transfer portal last year. He is already transferred out of the program. He's a starting quarterback at Connecticut, although he got hurt in the opener. So there's been, it's a little bit of the way of the world this year, these days in college football is you get transfers, but they're not necessarily guys who will stick around. And I think we're kind of seeing that. One guy I want to mention that's not a transfer that they brought in the recruiting class last year is maybe Metoyer. He's from Texas. Pretty highly regarded. Saw a little bit of him in camp. A guy that's not ready yet, and nor would you really expect him to be ready as a true freshman. I think he could maybe compete with Braden Locke next year for that starting job. I think if it's December, Larry, and we're talking in mid-December that Wisconsin's looking in the transfer portal for a quarterback, I think Luke Fickell would consider that a failure because that means the guys within the system are not developing and you're having to go out year after year after year to plug a gap at quarterback, which is a place you want. The word we used before with the offensive line is continuity. You want that at the quarterback position too.
And it's interesting. I mean, if the thing now is the players can leave.
Yeah.
And if you've got reasonably good quarterback and a reasonably good backup, if the backup doesn't like being the backup, the backup can be gone.
And not just that, if the starter has, like, let's say it's not going to happen this year, Tyler Van Dyke's a senior, he can't go anywhere. But if you have, and this is any position, if you have a really good underclassman who's a player, you have to re-recruit him these days. And that's every sport, basketball, volleyball, football. You have to re-recruit those players to make sure you can keep them. And they're hearing through the grapevine how much they'd be worth at another place. It's just, it's free agency, and it's unlimited free agency because in the old days, if you were going to transfer from program A to B, you had to sit out a year. And then there was a rule where you could have one transfer in your college career. Now you can transfer every year. You can go play in four schools in 4 years. That's not an ideal setup if you're a coach who has to manage a roster year to year.
Had a guy on the show 2 years ago, I think, we were talking sports and we were talking about admissions. And he said, well, Wisconsin and Northwestern get kind of screwed, is how he put it, because of our admission requirements are more stringent, shall we say, than others.
Yeah, I think that's true to a degree. That's another thing that, you know, it's you're not going to, transparency is an issue there because you're talking about privacy, student privacy records. But I do know that they've gone after guys that they have not been able to get into school for various reasons. And I think, frankly, they're, you know, if you're a football, basketball, volleyball coach, you're looking, the first thing you're doing when you see a player you like is you're looking at the high school transcript or college transcript, as it may be. And they're deciding to not even recruit a player because they know there's no chance they'll get him through admission. So I think there's truth to that. I don't know if it's overblown to some degree. I think Northwestern standards are certainly much higher than Wisconsin's. But I do think there are programs that Wisconsin's competing with both in the Big Ten and beyond the Big Ten where those standards are less and Wisconsin's having to make some tough decisions academically.
Yeah. Jim Polzin, our guest sports reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. Join in with your questions. Number to call, 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. 402-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR News Special Sports Day today, as we do the first Tuesday of every month. And great to have back Jim Polzin, sports reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal, talking about Badgers sports with him today. Zeroed in a bit on football. We could take some other areas as well as we move along. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. Talk@WPR.org. Here's another email. Do we have some stars coming up in the pipeline?
Yeah, that was so when the season started, I wrote, you know, kind of related to this tough schedule that, hey, if the record looks the same as it did last year, there are other ways to measure progress. And one of them I wanted to see was, are there young guys that we can count on being difference makers? And my theory, and I wrote this the other night, is I don't think there's enough game changers, difference makers, studs, whatever word you want to use, great players in the system right now, are proven, certainly. But are there some young guys that have come through these first couple recruiting classes for Luke Fickell? To that, I would say yes. I mean, we mentioned one of them, Tretch Ketkahun, who's only a redshirt freshman. The two running backs I mentioned before, Darian Dupree and Dylan Jones, I think in time will be potential all Big Ten type players. In the back end of the defense, Xavier Lucas, he had an interception the other night, I think is a guy that is going to play a lot of football this year already, and I think he's going to be a really good player in his college career. They've got some more in these recruiting classes. Thomas Heiberger is an outside linebacker. They've got another outside linebacker. I think there are some guys. I hesitate to label them as difference makers this early without having seen it, but I do like these first two recruiting classes that Luke Fickell's put together, and now it's just a matter of how can those guys develop and how quickly can they develop?
Yeah, and it's from a fan perspective, it's hard to tell how these guys are progressing.
And frankly, Larry, I didn't mention a quarterback, and that's a little bit of the issue. In college football, you need a great player at quarterback if you're going to be a great team. That's probably a little too far, but I strongly believe that if you're going to be great, you need a very, very good player at that position. And I don't know that Wisconsin has that in the pipeline yet. It's way too early to say. They've got Mabry Matoyer, I mentioned earlier. Braden Locke is a guy that's been okay. They've got Braden Locke's little brother, Landon Locke, is committed. He'll be here next fall. And they've got another quarterback in the 2026 class. I guess the bottom line, Larry, is they have to hit. They have to hit on a guy at that position if this program's going to take the step that it needs to take against in a world now where the Big Ten is bigger and better than ever.
I look back at the quarterbacks that we've had over the years, and we've had some good quarterbacks, but they're probably not what one would consider the very top of the line quarterbacks.
Russell Wilson, right?
That's kind of the standard.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I don't know how many Russell Wilsons you're going to find. And that was a unique situation where he had played 3 years at NC State and then transferred in. It's certainly finding that guy in the high school ranks and develop him would be more ideal, because then you have him as a starter for a couple years. I would take a season Scott Tolzien had the year before Russell Wilson arrived. I would take a season like Jack Cohn had in 2019. I'd take a season like Alex Hornibrook had in 2017. And again, I say that focusing on one player at one position, those guys, if you look through their seasons, they all had good offensive lines in front of them, good running backs to kind of balance and be compliments, and pretty good receivers, right? It's an entire package, and sometimes it's easy, and I do this too. I'm guilty of this. You ding a quarterback based on some stuff that's happening around him that's really not up to him.
Yeah, and Tyler Van Dyke, I mean, he got nailed.
He did.
Practically right away.
Helmet to helmet. Yeah. And I wonder how much that impacted him, because if you saw the rest of the game, he was a little bit of happy feet, which is understandable. And so we'll see if that's an issue all season.
Yeah. It'll be hard. Well, here you've got, who was it? Hunter Waller.
Yeah.
Saw a special, he said, you know, we're going to have a special season this year. Where was he coming from, do you think?
I think he believes that. I really do. He's from Muskego, highly regarded, could have gone anywhere 4 years ago. has been a really good player here. I think will be a, for my money, the best player on this roster. If I had to list this roster 1 through 120 or whatever it is, Hunter Wohler's name goes on the top without a doubt. Could have absolutely left after last season. Could have left 2 seasons ago after the coaching transition. Could have left last season after the things didn't go very well. And he could have played almost anywhere. I think there would have been a long line of really good programs. So if his goal was to make the playoffs, to go win a conference championship, Hunter Wohler certainly would have had that opportunity. He decided to stay, and I do think he believes this program will make a jump this year. I don't know that I'm going to criticize him for saying that's overly optimistic. Those guys know the program inside and out better than I do. We're not there every day like they are. So I think Hunter Wohler looks around and says, hey, if A, B, C, D happen, this team could be really good. And I think there's truth in that, Larry. Like, I think if you list the things of ifs and ands, then it could go right. It's there. I think the talent is here. And if you win some close games, one of this program's biggest issues in the last 4 years has been it has failed to finish close games in the fourth quarter, and it's lost some games that you think, this could have gone either way. You know, if that happens, a 9-4 season 2 years ago becomes, or 3 years ago, excuse me, becomes 11-2. 2 years ago, 7-6 becomes 9-4 or 10-3. Mm-hmm. So I don't think this program's far off. I think it's certainly, there's a ways to go. There's a pretty big gap between the Wisconsins and Ohio States and Michigans and probably Oregon now of the world. But I don't think the gap's so tight with, I think this program still could be a top 25-ish type team.
Yeah, we're better. There were some years. I mean, remember, we won two Rose Bowls in a row. Big Ten champions. We've had some really good scores. And here's an email from Paul. In your opinion, when was Wisconsin's last signature victory?
Yeah, that's a great one. They beat Iowa, I believe, at some point during the 2021 season. Went 9-4. They went up to Minnesota and had a chance, if they win that game, to win the Big Ten West. I believe there was a win over a ranked Iowa team in that mix. Other than that, you have to go back to, I don't know. I don't even know if there was one. They went to the Rose Bowl in 2019, but I'm not sure there was a quote unquote signature victory in that mix. It's been a while. And I think it's an absolutely great thing to point out that's one thing that's been lacking over the last 7 years. I think if you look at a little bit of the 7 year itch, they have not had a first round draft pick in the last 7 years, 2017 when they had TJ Watt, and Ryan Ramczyk. So it's been 7 years. It's a long time to go for a Big Ten program like Wisconsin to go without a first round draft pick. And that's kind of what I get to not having the stars in the system and not developing them has been a problem.
TJ Watt. I remember when the Packers passed on him.
Still paying for that one.
Oh, I just wrung my hands when he was passed over. Well, here's another one. Another email. What do you think of the Big Ten expansion? Maybe when is enough enough?
Yeah, it's because I don't know that it's done. I really don't know that this expansion era is over yet. The ACC, that's kind of a conference that I think there will be movement in once their deal with ESPN runs out, which who knows when that's going to be, because there's going to be court. There's already fights in the courts about it. What do I think about the Big Ten? I got to admit, Larry, I come at this from a very selfish perspective as a media member, and that's that I like new storylines. I like difference. I like traveling new places on the weekend. So I don't know that I'm looking at it through the same lens as a fan does. I'm looking forward to the game against Oregon. I'm looking forward to going out to Coliseum and seeing Wisconsin play LSU. Washington and UCLA are intriguing programs, not just from a football standpoint, from other sports, volleyball, basketball. So I understand where the fans are coming from. They want tradition. And they're certainly right. It's still a little odd to call it Big Ten the Big Ten when it's 18 teams and who knows how much it'll eventually grow. But when the news first came out that there was going to be 4 new Big Ten teams, I kind of scoffed at it, but I've come to accept it and tried to look for the positives in it.
And you meant USC, going to see USC, not LSU.
Oh, did I say LSU? Yes. Sorry, USC. Who knows? Maybe LSU is in the Big Ten someday.
Well, for me, it's a little tough to take two. The whole business of winning the Big Ten anymore, it almost seems like an impossible task.
Yeah, and I think fans need to take that into account in terms of expectation level. Let's go to the basketball side for a second, Larry. Bo Ryan had this amazing stat where he never finished worse than fourth in the Big Ten. He did that in a league that was, most of the time he was there, 11 teams. Got to be 14 at the end. But now, if there's 18 teams in the league, it's harder to finish. It's almost like a top six finish is if you're finishing the top 33% of the conference, that's commendable. So you kind of got to change your expectations to some degree. Certainly you want to compete for champ. You want to be in the running for championships late into the season. You don't want to be out and kind of looking up at the standings and realize there's no chance. But you do kind of have to recalibrate the way you evaluate programs these days.
Yeah, and when we think about the playoffs and Wisconsin making the playoffs, even is with this new system, 12 teams. But, five are already picked, automatics.
I think if you finish the top three of the Big Ten these days, you're going to be in. I think even now, if you finish in the top four, I mean, my guess is we'll see how it plays out, but I think the SEC will probably get four teams most years. I think the Big Ten is going to get four teams most years, strictly from a strength of schedule standpoint. I think the Big 12, ACC, probably aren't as strong top to bottom, and I think that's going to work in the Big Ten's favor. But, like you said, getting to the top three or four of an 18-team league is not anything that's very easy.
And I'm just looking. I don't know if I'm looking forward to this, but the amount of travel and time zones and everything else, I just wonder how that's going to affect.
Yeah, and I worry about it more from a football, not so much, because you're playing games on the weekends for the most part. Basketball, volleyball, certainly the non-revenue sports, right? The soccers and those sports. I think basketball is going to. Certainly this is a wise move. If Wisconsin plays at USC and UCLA, it'll be one trip. You'll go out to LA, play them on a Thursday, Saturday, or Friday, Sunday. Or if you go out to Oregon, Washington, same thing. It'll be a Thursday, Saturday, Friday, Sunday thing. So you're not making that trip multiple times. You're making it once, and you're staying out there. And they're going to try to, make it more manageable on the student athlete, or as manageable as possible on the student athlete.
Yeah. And as I chaired the student grades and so forth section, and I'm thinking, well, if it's a Thursday, Saturday, they got to leave on Wednesday.
Absolutely.
And so now it's Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. You're missing classes.
Well, I will say this now, Larry, is that especially post-COVID, classes are largely, you can attend them online.
Yeah.
I know I spoke for a journalism class here, and it was online. It was a Zoom thing. So I think there's ways around that. I think we can get into a whole discussion about academics, and I think it's better in person. Like, heck, this interview with you today, Larry, is better in person than it would be over the phone, right?
Absolutely.
And I think the same thing is with class, is if I'm in this classroom and staring at the professor and taking down notes, I think it's it's easier to stay focused and the distractions aren't quite there as easy as if you're, on Zoom.
What do you pick for Wisconsin football finish, and what do you pick for Wisconsin basketball finish, man?
I'm sticking with 8-4 for football, even though I have a lot less confidence in that after Friday night. I should probably go back to 7-5. And I actually think, if you ask me right now, 6-6 is not off the table. It was enough things. I shouldn't overreact to one game. Basketball is an even harder one, Larry, because the new teams in the league. That we haven't even seen a schedule yet. It's September. What day is it? September 3rd, and the men's basketball Big Ten schedule isn't out yet. So I don't know how the travel schedule will work out. I think it's a team that can sneak into the NCAA tournament yet. That is a brand new roster. Six new players out of the 16, three transfers, three freshmen. It's Greg Gard's got his work done to create chemistry, to create some continuity. And I will say this. I'm more fascinated by this season probably I've been since – in a long time. I just think it's going to be fun to see the new team, new players.
Jim, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks, always. It's been fun. This hour has flown by.
Yeah, the hour did fly by. Jim Polzin, sports reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal. I hope you'll come back and be with us again. Coming up, we'll take a look at women's weightlifting. I'm Larry Mueller.